Hey folks, Scott Horton here for Veterans for Peace at veteransforpeace.org. I'm not a vet, but if you are, I'd like to ask you to consider joining Veterans for Peace. As you know, in matters of foreign wars, a veteran's voice is given much more weight. Well, Veterans for Peace is making veterans' voices heard in ways and places where they can really make a difference. There are more than 175 chapters of Veterans for Peace in all 50 states, working hard to eliminate nuclear weapons, seek justice for veterans and victims of war, and abolish war as an instrument of American national policy. It's the peace vets versus the chicken hawks. Join up the good fight at veteransforpeace.org. Hey y'all, Scott Horton here. After the show, you should check out one of my sponsors, WallStreetWindow.com. It's a financial blog written by Mike Swanson, a former hedge fund manager who's investing in commodities, mining stocks, and European markets. Mike's site, WallStreetWindow.com, is unique in that he shows people what he's really investing in, updating you when he buys or sells in his main account. Mike's betting his positions are going to go up due to the Federal Reserve printing all that money to finance the deficit. See what happens at WallStreetWindow.com. In an empire where Congress knows nothing, the ubiquitous D.C. think tank is all. And the Israel lobby and their neocon allies must own a dozen. Well, Americans have a lobby in Washington, too. It's called the Council for the National Interest at councilforthenationalinterest.org. They advocate for us on Capitol Hill. Join CNI to demand an end to the U.S.-sponsored occupation of the Palestinians and an end to our government's destructive empire in the Middle East. That's the Council for the National Interest at councilforthenationalinterest.org. Hey ladies, Scott Horton here. If you would like truly youthful, healthy, and healthy-looking skin, there is one very special company you need to visit, Dagny & Lane, at dagnyandlane.com. Dagny & Lane has revolutionized the industry with a full line of products made from organic and all-natural ingredients that penetrate deeply with nutrient-rich ionic minerals and antioxidants for healthy and beautiful skin. That's Dagny & Lane at dagnyandlane.com. And for a limited time, add promo code SCOTT15 at checkout for a 15% discount. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. Website is scotthorton.org. All the interview archives are there. We're live on the radio from noon to 2 Eastern Time, Monday through Friday, less Thursday, at noagendastream.com. And our next guest on the show is the great Jason Leopold from truthout.org and from publicrecord.org. And this piece is called Sold Into a Piece of Hell, A Death of Innocence at Gitmo. Welcome back to the show. How are you doing, Jason?
Doing well, Scott. Thanks so much for having me back on.
This is a great piece of work. You really pissed me off with this thing here, but it's not your fault. It's just the truth that you're reporting on to people. But
yeah,
so
it was a difficult one to write. It's basically the story about the life and death of Adnan Farhan Abdul Latif, the last Guantanamo prisoner who died. He died in September 8th. This is a man who never should have been in Guantanamo, who should have been released during the Bush administration when they recommended he be transferred back to Yemen. The Obama administration actually recommended the same thing. When Obama was sworn into office, he set up a task force to take a look at all of the cases at Guantanamo. And there was, the task force made a recommendation a year later, said, these are the prisoners who should be released. These are the prisoners who should stay. And, these are the ones who should go before military commissions. This particular prisoner, Adnan Latif, the Obama administration recommended he be, repatriated. And the task force recommended that. And it's unclear why the Obama administration fought their own task force, because when when Adnan Latif's attorney went to, went to court to challenge his detention, basically seeking habeas corpus petition, the Obama administration, fought it. And
was it not just the no Yemenis ever get out again because we're too afraid that they'll participate in a plot and make Obama look bad kind of thing?
excuse me. Well, that was a little early, so it wasn't, you know, that didn't happen yet. The, you know,
okay,
the,
yeah, because that was a reaction to the 2009 Christmas attack, attempted attack.
Right, right. But, you know, his recommend, well, yes, that's actually true. So that could have been a part of it. But the fact is that they, you know, they actually went to court, you know, to fight his release. Anyway, you know, aside from that, this is just an incredibly tragic story, about, a young man who never should have been in Guantanamo, who leaves behind, a 14-year-old son. His son was 3 years old, when he was, picked up and sold to, U.S. forces for, you know, a $5,000 bounty. He was suffering, you know, he had mental health conditions he was suffering from, but the U.S. continued to maintain that, you know, he was fighting with the Taliban, fighting against the U.S., even though, the evidence was very thin. So this was a real difficult, you know, story to write, because what I wanted to do was humanize this person, you know, not just say he's the dead Guantanamo prisoner, but actually humanize him.
Yeah, and, it was a person before he was that, right?
Right, yeah. And,
hey,
and
listen,
I think,
you know what? I almost interrupted you in your very first sentence when you said his name to remark on the fact that, you know what, his name is not an English name. And it's just a shame, right, that if only, even if his middle name had been David or something, maybe, you know, like we could have had, you know, some kind of connection between people in North America and this poor bastard. But instead, he's named a name that no one we know is named, and so screw him. That's basically what it comes down to, I think.
You're right. That is what it comes down to. And here's the part that, you know, it becomes ever so tragic, when we find out that he dies at Guantanamo. He died at Guantanamo September 8th. We still don't know what, the cause and manner of death was. And his body is now being held in a, a secure undisclosed location, which I have learned is Ramstein Air Base in Germany. And so even in death, he's in indefinite detention. You know, he faces this sort of indefinite detention. His family can't mourn. And so, you know, the reason I mentioned that the cause and manner of death is unknown, I think it's very important, because unlike the nine previous deaths at Guantanamo, every time that, you know, we've heard from Joint Task Force Guantanamo that a prisoner has died, they've actually released a, you know, what they believe was a cause and manner of death, even though it may have been questionable, whether it was suicide, you know, cardiac arrest. In this case, with Adnan Latif, they haven't. And his death is looking more and more suspicious.
Huh. Well, of course, all the initial reports were, oh, yeah, you know, we knew that this guy was going to commit suicide eventually.
Well, you know, and it's understandable that people would sort of jump to that conclusion, because he did have previous suicide attempts. But his body was found. There was no sign of self-harm on his body. He was being held in a block at Camp 5, which is a punishment block at Guantanamo, that is monitored every 3 minutes. So literally guards are walking by every 3 minutes. And in certain cases, if you're what they refer to as a detainee of interest, every 60 seconds to check on the prisoners. And, they have to see, the guards have to see skin. So that's the way it was described to me. So, you know, he sometime in the afternoon, he became unresponsive, and unconscious. And, you know, some of the experts I spoke with said that usually,
did I lose you? Check. Oh, we lost. Well, that's a hell of a thing, ain't it? All right, y'all, welcome back. Apparently, Corporal Jerkface over at the National Security Agency felt like interrupting our conversation with the great Jason Leopold, but that's all right. We got him back on the line. Truthout.org and pubrecord.org for the public record. The piece is sold into a piece of hell, a death of innocence at Guantanamo. And we're talking about Adnan Latif, a Yemeni, who is one of the very first detained at Guantanamo, who recently died there. And we sort of already are skipping ahead to the end, but that's okay. We're talking right now about reasons to suspect that maybe there's something not quite right with this man's death, even though all the initial news reports said that he had committed suicide. There's reason to believe that maybe they're not, or at least it's a fact that they don't want to come clean with, you know, the record as quickly as they usually do anyway. That's what you were saying before the phone interrupted us, correct, Jason?
Yes, yes, and apologies for that. Sorry to skip, you know, to the end, but it's,
of course, that's the important news here. That's why people ought to be interested. This guy just died. Otherwise, we'd be talking about any one guy at Guantanamo, and they wouldn't care.
Exactly, and, you know, the fact is that he's no longer in the news. He's no longer an individual who is, generating headlines. The fact is that, you know, his family, who, you know, they haven't seen him in more than 10 years. They're unable to mourn, you know, his death. The Yemeni government will not accept his body until the U.S. provides them with a cause and manner of death. They want to also know what the, what the investigations turn up. And if you recall, there was a death of, about a year and a half ago of another, you know, Yemeni prisoner. In this particular case, it was, government said that he committed suicide, strangled himself with the elastic on his, underwear, which just, it sounded very suspicious. So, in terms of, you know, Adnan Latif, I think that, you know, perhaps the Yemen government is not willing to, you know, immediately accept his, you know, remains until, you know, they understand what happened. So, you know, at this point, as of yesterday, the Joint Task Force Guantanamo still, you know, will not release a cause and manner of death. The autopsy was already done. Now, it's been more than 6 weeks. And the forensic pathologist that I've spoken with have said that, look, you know, when it gets past 6 weeks, usually what they're trying to do is figure out what to say publicly. You know, and his feeling also, as I indicated before we got cut off, is was that drugs are usually the cause of death in cases like this, particularly benzodiazepines, any sort of antidepressants, any drugs that, cause brain depression. Pressure on the brain. So, and of course, you know, I want to make clear that I don't have any documents or any medical records. But what we do know is that Adnan Latif had, you know, been routinely drugged because he refused to be compliant over the years.
Yeah, well, as well he might. And that's the whole thing here is, you know, I really like the way you wrote this story, too, because, not that this would ever happen, but very well could be, you know, the TV movie of the week or whatever. Do they still have those? Where, you know, hey, it's the story of this one guy who otherwise you might not take notice of him, but, you know, out of the crowd, let's just follow this one guy on his path and whatever happened to him. And it's basically this guy who once got in a car wreck and then, like, you know, too bad he's not Hindu and has another chance to be reincarnated and start over because his life basically just went to hell from there on. And,
right.
You know, ending up with being in effect killed by Obama or Obama's men, you know, whether literally or not.
Yes, yes. And, that is certainly, I mean, it certainly left me speechless. You know, that's, you know, when I started looking into, you know, this story. I mean, we saw the headlines. We knew that a Guantanamo prisoner died, but really getting deep into it, you know, it left me speechless. I mean, I did speak with his family, and that's what really threw me off. I'm not even sure if that's the right way to describe it. You know, his father, I mean, I had an interpreter on the other end of the phone, and, you know, I was speaking to Adnan's father, and you can hear the emotion in this man's voice, even though I couldn't understand, you know, the interpreter hadn't yet translated what he was saying. But, you know, this was a man who was just so sad by the death of his son. And, you know, again, we picked up people back after 9/11 simply by the brand of Casio watch they wore. And we kept them, you know, locked up in Guantanamo, some who perhaps may still be there. And, here's the story of this man who, you know, suffered a debilitating head injury when he was in his teens at Adnan Latif, you know, and he simply was traveling in search of medical care. Yemen is a poor country. He was unable to obtain affordable medical care that would allow him to make a full recovery. The government of Yemen even declared him a disabled person and had urged, you know, citizens to help him, you know, obtain medical care. So, you know, he was obsessively searching for that. He meets someone who tells him about this Islamic charity in Pakistan. And so he sets off and, you know, goes to Pakistan and tries to search for this person who has this Islamic charity that would help him. And that leads him to Afghanistan. And, you know, that by the time he got there, you know, just a couple of months later, we invaded. And he just was unable to escape. So if you could hear what I'm saying, it's like, well, what was he doing in Afghanistan? Well, Afghanistan's a huge country. You know, that's the reaction that I get from people and that I've seen, that, you know, anyone who was in Afghanistan after the U.S. invaded, Scott, must have been fighting with the Taliban. You know, there's no reason for you to be there.
Yeah, well, and if they were an Arab, they were Al-Qaeda.
Exactly. So it's so bizarre, but that is exactly what the...
You're telling me this guy had a headache. He got a car wreck, and he had a headache, and he'd been traveling around trying to find a doctor who could figure out how to help him out. That's what it came down to.
Yes, yes. And
he was sold to Donald Rumsfeld.
Right, for $5,000. And, you know, he, like I said, he was one of the first prisoners at Guantanamo. And at least three times during the Bush administration, they recommended his release. The only evidence they had against him was this, you know, this intelligence report prepared by the CIA, but it was so thin. It allegedly, you know, said that he implicated himself, you know, after he was interviewed. You know, I should note that when he, during his combatant status review tribunal, you know, when he was supposed to answer the charges against him, they even had his name wrong. So, you know, this poor guy, you know, for 10 years literally was just fighting, saying, you've got the wrong guy. I'm not who, you know, you say I am. I've got a son at home. I've got a wife. Please let me go. And refused. You know, this kid is 14 years old now. And wow, that's what he grew up with, knowing that, you know, the United States.
And you talked to the boy too, right?
Yes.
Through a translator.
Yes, yes. And it's very sad. I mean, it's difficult to describe it. You know, it's much easier to write it than to, you know, to discuss it, because this is truly a tragic story. And that's not over, because we still don't know, you know, how he died. It's important for me to note that there was no sign of suicide, and between the conversations that have taken place between the U.S. government, State Department, and Yemen have already said that, you know, it wasn't a suicide. So, you know, how did he die? That's, you know, that's an important question. His lawyer says it's not as important as knowing that it was Guantanamo that killed him.
Yeah, that's what I was saying about, you know, Obama murdered him in effect, Obama and his men, one way or the other, they're responsible for this. And, you know, just, you know, anybody tuning in late or whatever, you kind of missed it. It's not just that, hey, it turns out that this poor guy didn't really do it. It's that the Bush administration and the Obama administration and the military and everybody agreed. The CIA, you say, had one report that was thin as could be. And then after the Boumediene decision, when the Supreme Court said, hey, everybody gets at least one shot in front of a federal judge under the writ of habeas corpus, that federal judge said, yeah, set him free. And everyone agreed, set him free. And everyone agreed there was no case against him. And everybody agreed that his case said, no, really, he was just a guy with a splitting headache from this car wreck he got into one time. And he just wants to go home is legit, and they all believe it, and there's no reason to disbelieve it. And then they still held him in prison for years and years after that. I mean, what? This is the reason it's so objectionable to me is not just the what a horrible crime it is against this man, but it's also because, you know, this is like freedom of religion or something. We're getting down to the very last few things that Americans are still good on, right? Like, you give a man a fair trial, right? Like, that's one thing where, you know, unlike the Russians, where sometimes you don't even know what the charge is. Yeah. Like in that terrible book where the guy doesn't even know what the charge is. Which is like a, you know what I mean? This is a reality that someone else in the old world has to suffer, unfortunately for them, but not us, not here in America. We don't do things that way, and yeah, we do.
Yeah, we do, and we have been doing it for quite some time. So it's not new. It's just now it's out in the open. Now we know about it. You know, when he brought his case to, you know, before a federal judge who granted his, you know, habeas corpus petition, that's when the Obama administration appealed it. And they appealed it to the D.C. Circuit, and their ruling out of the D.C. Circuit was basically, you know, essentially gutting habeas corpus, because they said that the government's evidence, no matter how thin, is entitled to a presumption of regularity. So,
right, and you know what? I talked with Marjorie Cohen about that. She's the professor at, I forget now, Thomas Jefferson School of Law or something, but she was the head of the Center for Constitutional Rights at the time, I think. Anyway, and she
National
knows.
Lawyers,
and
yeah.
She said that that was a brand new invented phrase, like illegal enemy combatant, that they had just made up that whole brand new thing in the law, presumption of regularity, meaning presumption that whatever the intelligence agencies say on the piece of paper must be true.
Right, and it, and the burden would fall upon Adnan Latif to, you know, to prove that it's not true. And so this went all the way up to the Supreme Court. And in June, you know, as you mentioned, you know, the Supreme Court issued that landmark decision saying, you know, that detainees have the right to, you know, challenge their detention. So in June, the Supreme Court decided, nope, they're not going to take it up. And, you know, at that time, Adnan Latif had been, you know, on a hunger strike. He just ended his hunger strike. He regained about 95% of his body weight. He seemed to be in good spirits. At least that's the way his, you know, his lawyer described him. And then on September 8th, you know, it was the afternoon, he was found dead in his cell. Again, you're supposed to walk that block every 3 minutes. So it's unclear, you know, how that could happen, because what we say, you know, what Joint Task Force Guantanamo says is that, you know, things like this are never supposed to happen at Guantanamo because the guard force is supposed to catch it. You know, in his cell, he has a video camera affixed to the ceiling. You know, it's wired for sound, as well. So, they're constantly monitored. And, you know, at this point, it's still, I'm still trying to figure out, exactly, you know, what the cause and manner of death is. But in addition to that, I'm trying to access his medical record, which, you know, perhaps would give a little bit of an insight as to, you know, what he had been given in terms of medication.
Yeah, well, I sure hope you stay on the story. I know you will, and find out just what happened there.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's a story that I think that will be, unfortunately, Scott, seeing many more types of stories like this. You know, there's no plan to let any of those prisoners out, and they're getting older and weaker, and they're eventually, you know, will die there. So,
well, we got appearances to keep, so you know.
Yes.
All right. Well,
we'll come up with a good cover story, I'm sure.
Or not, whichever.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much for your time, as always, especially I kept you over time here a little bit.
I appreciate it, Scott.
It's great to talk to you. Great journalism, as always, Jason.
Thank you. Take care.
Everybody, that's the great Jason Leopold from truthout.org. This one is at pubrecord.org, the public record. Sold into a piece of hell, a death of innocence at Gitmo. Hey, read this thing. It's really good, man.
Ben Franklin said, "Those who are willing to sacrifice essential liberty for a little temporary safety deserve neither." Hi, Scott Horton here for the Bill of Rights Security Edition from SecurityEdition.com. It's a plain card-sized steel Bill of Rights designed to set off the metal detectors anywhere the police state goes, so you can remind those around you the freedoms we've lost. And for a limited time, get free shipping when you purchase a frequent flyer pack of 5 Bill of Rights Security Edition cards. Play a leading role in the security theater with a Bill of Rights Security Edition from SecurityEdition.com. The Scott Horton Show is brought to you by the Future Freedom Foundation at FFF.org. Join the great Jacob Hornberger and some of the best writers in the libertarian movement like James Bovard, Sheldon Richman, Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, and more for a real individualist take on the most important matters of peace, liberty, and prosperity in our society. That's the Future Freedom Foundation at FFF.org. Hey everybody, Scott Horton here. Ever think maybe your group should hire me to give a speech? Well, maybe you should. I've got a few good ones to choose from, including how to end the war on terror, the case against war with Iran, central banking and war, Uncle Sam and the Arab Spring, the ongoing war on civil liberties, and of course, why everything in the world is Woodrow Wilson's fault. But I'm happy to talk about just about anything else you've ever heard me cover on the show as well. So check out youtube.com/Scott Horton Show for some examples, and email Scott at scotthorton.org for more details. See you there. Hey everybody, Scott Horton here for LibertyStickers.com. If you're like me, then you're right all the time, surrounded by people in desperate need of correction. Well, we can't all have a radio show, but we can all get anti-government propaganda to stick on the back of our trucks. Check out LibertyStickers.com. Categories include anti-war, empire, police state, libertarian, Ron Paul, gun rights, founders quotes, and of course, the stupid election. That's LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck.